Hello, everyone. I'm Leslie Cornwell with Midwifery Business Consultation. I am very excited. I have Dan Decker here with Evidence-Based Birth. He is Rebecca Decker's husband and does the financial aspect of the business. So I'm very excited to learn how the business had been started, their background and story for the Evidence-Based Birth. Thank you, Dan, for coming.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
So tell us a little bit about yourself, Dan, and how you and Rebecca evolved to create Evidence-Based Birth in 2012.
Sure. So I got a business degree in college in Michigan, not far from where you are, Leslie, and eventually got my master's down here in Kentucky, master's in business, and I've always done accounting work primarily. So even though I have a kind of general business major, I've primarily done accounting work. And so I worked for various small businesses throughout my quote regular career. And then starting in 2012, Rebecca started this little blog that she called Evidence-Based Birth. And she started writing articles about childbirth and the research that she had around childbirth, the practices, what the research actually showed is best in during childbirth. And that has grown quite a bit over the years. Again, yeah, just started as a blog, but now it's both of our full-time jobs. So I quit my regular job 6 years ago, and Rebecca did 3 or 4 years ago, quit being a professor, and now we do that full-time, running Evidence-Based Birth.
What are all the different, I guess for somebody, I mean, most people in the birth world know Evidence-Based Birth, but if you would tell a little bit about the business and the resources, services, what is Evidence-Based Birth?
Sure. So we are a online tool for parents and professionals to give them evidence and, again, the research on childbirth practices. So it's evolved a lot through the years, but right now there's kind of two main parts. One is for parents. There's a lot of free information for parents. All of our articles and information are free in some form on the website. So if you want to read through the webpage about each topic, you can do that for free. And that's a big way parents interact with us, because a lot of young parents don't have money, or they have a lot of things to buy when getting ready to have a kid. And, you know, paying for research evidence isn't one thing they want to pay for. So we make sure to have all that evidence free for parents. A new thing on the parent side is we do have a childbirth education class that our instructors teach, and so parents can take that class. But the bulk of our business is focused towards birth professionals. Midwives and doulas are probably the biggest subset of those birth professionals, but we have doctors and nurses as well, and childbirth educators as well. And what we have for them is now a membership site, so people can join our membership and they get a whole lot of continuing education classes they can take to fill the requirements. And then a lot of just regular ongoing updated information provided to them. So Rebecca does usually weekly Facebook Lives where she'll go over a current topic with them. There's all the training videos they can take. We have a lot of digital resources for birth professionals, so handouts that members can print out, little one-page summaries of the evidence they can give to their clients, and sometimes their clients take those to their doctor or the midwife. And then, so that's all for members. And then we also have what we call the instructor program, where birth professionals sign up, get trained, and then they can take some of our evidence-based birth materials and teach that in their own communities. That started with just classes for other birth professionals. So they have different topics they can teach to other doulas and midwives. We have a class for labor and delivery nurses that can be taught. And then just recently, we started the childbirth class for parents, and that's been really popular, actually. So a lot of our instructors are using our materials to teach childbirth education in their own communities. And I think that's about the bulk of it right now.
Well, it sounds like you guys are very adaptable to the times. It sounds like you had a passion and a dream, and it just evolved as you found a need within the communities, from my understanding.
Right. Each step on the way, there was always a dialogue between us and our customers or people reading our materials. So initially Rebecca just wrote these articles, and then finally she kind of asked everybody, hey, would you be interested in taking a class on this and getting some continuing education hours? And all the midwives and doulas said, yeah, we'd love that. And because Rebecca was a nurse, she was able to apply and get approved for continuing education hours. So we started selling one-off classes years ago and then kind of kept selling class after class. And finally had enough built up that we could turn it into a membership so people could just pay the monthly fee and then have instant access to all those materials. And then all the handouts kind of came along with that, the PDFs and stuff. They've proved really popular with people, so they're all included in the membership as well. And then again, the instructor program kind of came out from there, you know, trying to think of a way that a midwife or a doula who is often on call really can only take a certain number of patients per month could make some extra money using their birth knowledge. And one way was teaching these classes to other birth professionals in their community. So it's another way for them to have a revenue stream that doesn't necessarily conflict with their schedules and their on-call schedules. So, it's always been about providing the customers what they want, not making something and hoping they want it, but like talking to them and then figuring out what they want, what they need.
I think that's good business sense. Always, you may think it's the best thing in the world, but not everybody has your same viewpoint.
It's interesting how many people don't. They skip that step, or it seems intuitive when you step back, but to actually like ask you, you know, take the time to send out a survey or ask your customers, hey, what do you need next, or what's the thing you're struggling with? That's a great way to find out what they need and then design products around that.
Yeah, I think so much we get focused on, okay, I have a business plan, I've got steps, I've got a strategic plan, but it's always going to be ever evolving. And like, you didn't anticipate 6 months ago a pandemic was going to come and people needed more online resources. So automatically you guys got boosted with marketing from that revenue, but you also evolved to make online childbirth education courses because of the increased demand. So having that business sense where you're able to say, I'm not rigid, this is my mission and value, but also during certain situations, you've got to evolve to the needs of the customers.
Right, yeah, being flexible, I think, is a huge asset for any business, being willing and able to change quickly with the time. So our childbirth education class was, we called it a hybrid model, so there was the first class and the end class were in person, and then all the middle classes were online, Zoom meetings, and online training. But yeah, as soon as COVID-19 happened, we knew pregnant people being a high-risk population, we're not going to go out and meet other high-risk people. So we immediately started working on transitioning the class to fully online. So now the childbirth class is a fully online class.
Well, and I think the part that's so amazing is hybriding, where you have things that are more automated, like being able to tap into online information side versus services. You and Rebecca work really hard to make your education, your resources, your templates, but it's more of the maintenance upkeep after the fact. So you've got this potential of an unlimited return on investment, which is amazing on a business side. So do you mind going a little bit more into that aspect?
Well, that's one of the things that bothers me. If we were like a history website, you know, we could just write an article about Abraham Lincoln and never change it again. But the problem with research is it's ever evolving. So there is a lot of like upkeep of the material. So one benefit of having this be a full business and bringing in some revenue is we have people who work for us. And one of them is a wonderful person named Anna, who is a research person now. And so she works part-time from her home and does nothing but look up current research. So she works on the new articles, but then also is always going back and looking at what new information has come out about existing articles and then doing updates to those as well. So yeah, we do as best we can to keep all our information up to date, but it is a lot of work.
It is. And having the budget and the numbers to make sense to hire somebody versus doing it yourself. I mean, I'm sure you and Rebecca had always done everything yourselves in the beginning and then evolve as the business gets going.
Right. And that's one thing I think maybe people realize, but part of, you know, growing a successful business is having that revenue coming in so that you have the time and the income to make those things happen. So if we hadn't started charging for classes or started the membership, you know, it would still be Rebecca sitting here in the evenings part-time trying to do all this work, and there's no way we would do as much as we have. But since we have the membership and have revenue coming in, we're able to hire out all these different roles and really provide a lot more services than we ever could have without the revenue coming in.
You guys ever have like a business plan in the beginning? I know it started out as your blog, but when did it switch over to just a fun pastime to like, hey, we can actually make a business out of this?
Yeah, we never had like a long-term strategic plan of where we want to go. We always have goals and new things, you know, on the burner that we want to roll out. We roll them out as quick as we can with the resources we have. But really, it was just kind of evolving as it went on. I think the biggest surprise was finding out how many people were actually reading the blog. I don't think we ever intended to monetize anything till we find out, you know, one day we were looking at the numbers and we said, holy cow, 50,000 people a month are coming to the evidence-based birth website. And once you realize you have that big of an audience, you think, yeah, maybe a small subset of those people are willing to pay a little bit, you know, for a continuing education class or something like that. So yeah, it's really evolved over the years. I can't say we ever had like a grand scheme of where we were going in the long run. It's just ever evolving based on the current situation. So.
Well, and you found something that worked good for you and Rebecca. It's something you're both, I'm assuming you're very passionate about it because you had kids and you had those. I mean, it's one of those things that you guys found your calling. I think that's so important with a business. If you are going to work and you're going to put in lots of hours and investment in the beginning versus you're getting a paycheck right from the beginning, you got to love what you're doing.
Yeah, we kind of always thought we wanted to own our own business. We talked about it in theory. We would have never guessed 10, 15 years ago it would be in the childbirth field, but it worked out and here we are. So
we're very enjoying it. We love. So yeah, no, I think it's amazing what you and Rebecca have created and how massive it's evolved. I mean, looking at your Facebook, I was just blown away the likes and the exposure. I mean, that's the advantage of switching from the industrial age to the information age is we have access to billions and billions of people around the world. And have you had much international exposure? Has it been more the United States and the local research here?
United States is obviously our primary market. We have a lot of people in Canada who do stuff. Sometimes I think I ship to Canada more than almost any other individual state in the U.S. But we do have quite a few international clients. We have members, we have instructors in different countries. And in addition to doing all the finances, I'm in charge of shipping everything. So every time someone orders something from Evidence-Based Birth, I'm the one packaging that up and shipping it. And so I made a list one time after one of our big Black Friday sales. And yeah, 20, 30 countries at least I've shipped to all over the world. So lots to Australia, of course, but we've shipped in the Middle East, Asia, plenty to Europe, a handful to South America, even some African countries. So.
What would you have say are your biggest challenges and successes over the last 8 years with the business?
Well, we have been really fortunate that a lot of the stuff we have done has really hit off with our clients. I can't even think of any off the top of my head. We've had some things that we've tried that didn't go so well. I mean, the instructor program, the way we first structured it, people were having trouble selling classes, but we modified that and it's going well. So again, I think talking to your clients and figuring out what they want has been the hugest goal for us. As you're mentioning earlier, it's interesting being in the information age because just starting and running a business is a lot simpler than it ever used to be. I have an uncle who does a manufacturing business, and we were just kind of comparing the beginning of our journeys, and he talked about having his house mortgaged for years, you know, for collateral to open this factory and that sort of thing. And running an online business, you can practically start for free. So that's been a big benefit for us of this current age is the ability to start a business online, have minimal costs, you know, run it on the side at first, and then thankfully never need a loan or never need investors or anything like that. So
we're very fortunate with so much technology for sure to be able to access. I mean, yeah, you compare it to an industrial, somebody that has services and supplies, you have your knowledge and you have the internet. You have to pay for your website and your basic resources. Facebook's free and it's putting your knowledge out there for sure.
Yeah, I mean, thankfully, of course, nobody predicted it or saw it coming, but with COVID-19, it sure has helped to be an online business that doesn't require in-person interaction. Again, other than the instructor classes, but we did our best to modify those as quickly as possible to adapt and only do those virtually as well.
And how many workers do you guys have total? You mentioned, Anna or Hannah had done a lot of your part-time research for you. What other workers do you have with evidence-based birth?
Yeah, so our team has slowly grown over the years. So really we did everything we could with just the two of us, but then it just the customer service work got too much. So we started with a customer service person, just helping answer emails, helping people who had problems logging into the website, stuff like that. So we have a key customer service person working for us now. We have someone who kind of runs the membership program and helps people join the membership and just answer the questions about the membership. We have someone who is in charge of the instructor program and actually was one of our top instructors, and we asked her to come work for us and she said yes. And so we have someone who works part-time doing that. We have two people who are help us with graphic design and video editing. They are actually in the Philippines, but they're wonderful folks. And they help us do graphic design and video editing. And any image you see, they've had their hands on, or video, they've had their hands on podcast editing. And then we have a research person now who works part-time. And then we just hired, maybe our newest hire was someone who is kind of the, I forget her actual title. She kind of manages everything overall. So just helps Rebecca with anything that's needed and just kind of general coordination and organization of the whole business. We have a team of 7 or 8 people. Most of them work part-time. We have our operations manager is full-time. And they're spread out all over the place. So we've always been virtual, so it's really helped us to be able to spread out where we hire. So we have someone in Michigan, someone in Alabama, a couple here in Kentucky with us, and then people overseas as well, and one in New Jersey. So that's really helped because we had a wide pool we could pull from because we weren't geographically limited.
Well, and that's the other benefit of an online business, because you can not just your local community, somebody that has to be on site, you have experts all over the world you can tap into. So that's another benefit of an information age online business.
Right. It has been helpful. I mean, I know a company here in town and they work out in eastern Kentucky, which is very rural and mountainous. And so they actually have their main office and accounting office here in Lexington because they can't find enough people out there to keep their office running. So they run all the accounting and stuff out of Lexington because there's a bigger job pool. They would be very geographically limited where they were before. So it's been nice to us to have a wide pool of people to pull from. We've got a great team now, and we don't have any plans to grow it at this point. We're just trying to grow within our team. And I think we have a great team. We're really happy right now.
I think it's very impressive in 8 years what you guys have all accomplished and the team you've grown and the resources you've provided. How do you put for you and Rebecca, because that's the hard part, being a business owner, especially when there's not an office to go to, your office is in your house. How do you set boundaries for personal and work life?
It is tricky. First of all, I'll tell you, we share an office, so Rebecca and I work next to each other all day while our kids are in school, and then obviously we live together. And it's amazing how many people we tell that to, and they just say, oh, I could never spend all day with my spouse. Like, we would kill each other if we tried to work like that. But thankfully for the two of us, it's worked out very well. So, I mean, when our kids are in school, we're home just the two of us, but we usually have enough going on that we're, even though we're working close by each other, we're working on separate tasks. But it is tricky, especially during summer months and especially when COVID-19 happens and all of a sudden your three kids are home 24/7 and you're trying to get work done at the same time. We use our calendars a lot. So, you know, we try to make sure anything we need to do is on our calendar so the other person can see it and know that they need to be primarily in charge of the kids while that happens. That's a big part of it. Rebecca obviously works a lot more hours on it than I do. So I do a lot. I've always done a lot more of the childcare stuff since I quit my job to stay home with them. But yeah, the balance is, it's a little tricky. You try to keep that office door closed and keep kids out, but there's obviously a lot more interruptions than you would have if you were at a separate third-party location or an office you could go to. And you know, we've thought about, you know, maybe we should have a backyard office, or maybe we should rent some office space. But all those solutions, you know, cost money or cost rent, and frankly, we can do it out of our home. And
you can save a few hours of your time.
Don't spend in your business. Right. Any dollar you don't spend in your business just goes back into your pocket. So instead of paying $500 rent for an office, I just get to keep that $500. So I don't think we're going to move out of our house anytime soon. But yeah, we do the best we can. I honestly have more trouble staying focused when the kids are around. Rebecca's pretty good at staying laser focused on her work and trying to tune out all the noises. So. But it's difficult. I know it's not for everybody. Even Rebecca's sister said I could never work from home. All the work at home would distract me, you know, the cleaning and things that need being done. She couldn't do it. But yeah, I think it takes the right type of person to stay motivated when you're working from home. But thankfully it works out for us.
And I think being a business owner in general, you have to have the right personality and determination and drive, because yeah, if you aren't instantly getting your paycheck and it's an investment, or, oh my goodness, I would rather go do this and I'll do that later, I'll push it off, like eventually that money doesn't come in. And so it's definitely, you have to have the drive and the determination of self-accountability. That's very different than being an employee. So.
For sure. And I mean, partially the motivation is there because if you don't do the work, you won't get the money. that's a good motivating factor, but it does take a lot of self-initiative to make sure you're working and getting that job done, and a lot of hard work, frankly, of being a small business owner. There's plenty of rewards, but it's definitely a lot of hard work too.
That goes into the next part. So what's your favorite part of running your own business?
For us, it is just the freedom to make our own schedule and do what we want in life. I've seen some of these posts recently, you talk about financial freedom, but then also like time freedom. So the ability to do what you want with your own time. And that's been huge for us. Back when Rebecca we were both working, I had a lot less vacation time than Rebecca. College job is lighter in the summer and just naturally they have more vacation time. So, I mean, I had a spreadsheet going in Excel and it was my PTO spreadsheet, and here's how many hours I earned every paycheck, and I would calculate in the future and put in all our future travel dates and that sort of thing. And we were really limited by that schedule of how often, you know, how much PTO I had and where we're going to use it. And that just basically controlled all of our vacations, trips to see relatives, that sort of thing. So since I quit and since we both work for ourselves now, that's been really the huge benefit, is just being able to travel whenever we want. Even it's just as simple as, you know, going to Michigan for Christmas time to see my family. We're not worried about requesting time off or, you know, making sure we have enough vacation time saved up. It's just whatever we want to do, we can go do that. That's been huge. Probably the biggest example is, I don't even know how it started, but we wanted to go to a trip in the winter because we're not big cold weather fans. So we went to Hawaii a year and a half ago for a month, and we took the kids, pulled the kids out of school, and we homeschooled them for a month. But we got to take a 4-week vacation that was not even imaginable back when I used to work. You know, I never had 4 weeks in one whole year that I could take off, let alone 4 weeks in a row. So that time flexibility has really been the nicest thing for us.
But you get to choose, do I want to work in Hawaii or do I not want to work in Hawaii? Because it's online, you can make the decision. Like, I've seen so many amazing business owners with online businesses. They can work from anywhere and people don't know where they are. So,
right. And yeah, I mean, we have those theoretical discussions all the time of living or working anywhere. But family, you've realized how important family is when you're gone for them for a while. So it's hard not to live somewhere close to family, or at least within a close drive of family. So I always make the joke that grandkids are going to ruin all my grand retirement screen schemes, you know, living on some tropical island. I'm going to be stuck in the Midwest somewhere close to grandkids, but
you'll have to have two homes. You'll have to have your island and you'll have to have the grandkid visiting site.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll just have to travel a lot, I guess.
Well, I really appreciate your time today, Dan. I know you're very, very busy. Is there any other advice or tips you would suggest to aspiring business owners in the birth world?
Sure. The main thing I talk about with birth professionals, and it's something I know you probably work on with them too, is that in order to be successful as a midwife or as a doula, you really have to succeed as a business owner too. And I think a lot of midwives and doulas don't like to hear that. And for a lot of people, it's not at all what I got into being a midwife or doula, but it's kind of the reality of the situation. So I lost my train of thought there for a second.
Oh, but just the importance of business sense. Yeah.
Yeah. So I always say, and I teach this class for birth professionals, you know, the most successful midwives and doulas aren't the ones that know the most number of positions to push a baby out or know the most number of comfort techniques. It's the one who tend to develop the best business sense about how to run the business are the most successful. And it feels kind of cold and harsh to talk about such a beautiful thing as birth as like go out and make the money, but it's the reality of what you need personally in order to do your job successfully. So yeah, getting business training as a midwife and doula, I think is really critical. I don't think many of the midwife and doula trainings or certification programs provide that training. And frankly, it's not just for midwives or doulas either. I know photographers, all these different businesses that say, yeah, I know how to take pictures. I just don't know how to run a photography business. And so I think getting training and learning how to, you know, run your own accounting, that sort of things is really important and something that midwives and doulas should make a priority. Because, you know, we're not all doing this as a hobby on the side. Without that income coming in, we can't continue to be midwives and doulas and to do the necessary work that parents want and parents definitely need right now too. So
that was part of the mission and the reason I started Midwifery Business Consultation, because I wanted to prevent burnout. I want lots of midwives and birth workers all over the country, and you have to have a good business sense. If you don't understand how to negotiate with an insurance company or make a business plan or know how to market or hire staff and train and policies, I mean, you're going to work so hard and not make money and not be, but I look at it as the more money you make and the more sustainable it is, you can now have other side. Now you can have a low income population you're serving, you can focus your mission on what's truly valuable to you if you have the revenue streams coming in from other directions or a good, strong business plan.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, totally agree. That's huge. And I mean, an evidence-based birth is kind of an example of that. If we didn't monetize, it would still just be a little blog that a lot of people read, but that was it. And it wouldn't be providing the continuing education hours. It wouldn't be providing near as much research and evidence, especially on a timely fashion as we do right now, without being able to hire people to help us do all that work. So
I think it's great what you guys have created. And yeah, it's that balancing act. You have a mission, you have a value, but you need the money to keep the lights on and to hire those amazing resources to grow it. So yeah. Well, thank you very much, Dan, for your time. I appreciate it greatly, and I hope the rest of your day goes really well.
All right. Thanks, Leslie, for having me. It was great.